They came out of the rising sun, 50 hard-bitten men and Gustavo Carvajal. Immediately, the bandits opened up, firing through the windows and open doorways of the 10 small two-room adobe houses around the high wall of the hacienda. Death and fire had come to Rancho Paseo. 20 men with Carvajal in the lead went directly to the hacienda. They found the wrought iron gate closed against them, along with the high double panel door. Carvajal didn't waste time trying to breach the obstruction.
Get ladders! We go over the walls!
Why are we taking the risk of going in here? Just to burn it?
No! I have something special in mind. That's why I have the best men with me. I sent Pedro Chacon to round up the girls and young women. I expect he'll amuse himself with a few of them while he's at it. I can trust you and these others to hold your fire when I say so.
Hold fire?
Yes, my loyal Thomas. We're going to take prisoners inside this oh-so-fine hacienda.
Several bandidos returned with ladders, and the picked men swarmed up and over the walls. Then, the doors and gates swung open. Carvajal entered, swaggering. Three white cotton-clad bodies lay on the ground, diminished in death. He waved an arm to illustrate his instructions.
Secure the patio! Dig out the servants! Thomas, you and I will go visit the lady of the house.
They found her door bolted against them.
Quickly, break it down.
Carvajal's men picked up a small bench in the hallway and used it like a battering ram. Highly satisfied, El Rey paced back through the hall and located Tomas.
We'll be leaving soon. Martini Ruiz will have heard of this. He will come. Leave a rear guard of 20 men to give him a small surprise, eh?
That will be most fitting, Excellency.
Fine. Bring his wife and children. We will head for our camp.
An hour later, Smoke Jensen and Martine rode in with Martine's retainers. They saw the smoke of burning buildings at a good distance. It prepared them, in part, for what they saw. Every structure outside the hacienda itself had been put to the torch. At a distance of 100 yards, the bodies could be seen huddled on the ground. Carvajal's rear guard had opened up on them at that range, too.
We haven't any choice but to get right at them.
Martine nodded agreement.
If they don't shoot any better than they have so far, we have a good chance.
You may lose a few good men.
From what I see, I already have. No, my friend. Worry over that. He's time wasted. I say we get in close and clean out this scum.
They came like a whirlwind. Smoke and Martine took 5 men each and split around the walls of the hacienda. Smoke saw a fat bandit giving more attention to a tequila bottle than his area of responsibility. Two bandidos rushed into the street from what had once been a small cantina. They appeared directly in front of Smoke Jensen. Martine appeared then, herding two of Carvajal's bandits ahead of him. His smile made a white slash in his dark face.
It worked perfectly. They were all concentrating on Alvarez and the men who came at them from the front. I have 2 wounded. How about you?
Smoke had not checked the 5 who came with him. He did so quickly.
Looks like Negocio got a scratch. Nothing more. We've won a cheap victory. Something tells me these aren't the only men Carvajal sent to visit your hacienda.
Most likely. I am sure these cerdos will tell us all we want to know.
An eerie silence settled over the ruins outside the hacienda. Alvarez brought news of the wanton slaughter inside. Martine's face hardened.
What of my wife and children?
Gracias a Dio. They are not among the dead. But we can find them nowhere in the hacienda.
That bastard has taken them. If only we could have gotten here sooner.
I won't have a problem trailing them. I'll take most of the men and start at once. You best do what you can for your people here.
Half an hour along the clear trail of Carvajal's bandit army, Smoke Jensen reined in. An old man stood at the side of the road, hat removed respectfully and held in front of his chest.
You're looking for the ladrones who rode this way, señores?
We are.
They are far ahead of you.
We know that.
What is it you wish to do when you find them?
Kill them.
I hoped you would say that. I am called El Viejo, the old one. Do you know where it is they are going?
There's a camp in the mountains to the east of here, in a large valley surrounded by high crags.
I know this country well. Would it please you to find another route that would put you in front of these hombres malos?
It would indeed.
I can lead you.
Then show us the way.
Oh, I must take care of my burro first.
Unload him and put him on a long tether to graze. We'll leave some water.
Gracias, senor. I am yours to command.
They entered the mountains 20 minutes later, cut across a hogback ridge, and dropped into a deep, lush valley. The vegetation seemed almost tropical to Smoke Jensen, who missed his pines and aspen. Tall, scaly trees rustled and sighed, bent in the strong breeze that blew above them. Colorful birds whose names Smoke didn't know flashed through the limbs. Unexpectedly stout for his great age, the woodcutter maintained a good pace on horseback. By noon, the rescue party had crested the spine of the ridge and began to descend among lower, rounder mountains.
We are not far. Another hour, maybe.
Gradually, the terrain took on a vaguely familiar appearance. The old man had led them close to Cabeza de Borrego, in the valley where Carvajal had his camp.
You've done a good job. Now, if only they're behind us.
Traveling as they were, they must be an hour or two behind us.
Then we had better get started.
Smoke and Martine's men set about felling several smaller trees. These they topped and trimmed away excess branches.
Leave some of them long. Put a point on them.
Unaccustomed to thinking like Arapaho or Blackfoot warriors, the workmen from Martine's ranch had no idea what Smoke planned to do with the logs. Most accepted that they would be used to block the trail. Not so, they soon learned. Smoke gathered up a half a dozen braided leather riatas from the vaqueros and rigged the poles into deadfalls. At his urging, two men backed their horses, drawing the heavy green logs into the air and securing them to the trip line. Smoke approached an agile youngster of 16 or so.
Take these branches we've cut and shimmy up that tree. Work your way out on a limb and use these to hide the deadfall.
Grinning with suppressed excitement, the youth followed directions earnestly. With swift, sure moves, he wove an overlapping pattern of branches that caused the deadly trap to disappear into the background. Smoke then located some springy young saplings at the edge of the trail and fixed wooden spikes to them. Then he bent them back away from the pathway and secured them to trip lines.
No time to dig a proper pit.
When the last of their preparations had been carefully hidden, Smoke selected positions for the men.
You'll be up there in these rocks. Pick a spot which leaves the trail open to you for a long way. Let the head of the column get through to me. I'll drop the first ones in line, then get them to run through here without paying much attention to the surroundings. You men will be there further down the trail. Close off their rear when you hear the first shots. Push them hard. Don't give them any time to think about Senora Martine and the children or any other captives.
All they could do now was wait as the men faded into the underbrush. The position Smoke picked for himself was the most dangerous. He would remain on horseback in the middle of the trail, around a bend from the center of the ambush site. If all went well, he should be able to fight his way to the side of Martine's wife and free her and the kids. Yeah, all he had to do was wait now. Smoke heard him long before any of the outlaw army came into view. Surprise painted the face under the big brim of fancy sombrero that was at the head of the column. Its owner knew the huge man in front of him did not belong to El Rey's army.
Release Senora Martine and the children!
Emboldened by what appeared to be a single man challenging them, the confused banditos at the front of the column spurred their mounts forward. The bandits flashed past Smoke. Then he heard the first trip line. Smoke saw the frightened face of Consuela Martine in a swirl of surprised bandit faces. There beside her, the two small boys and her daughter. Smoke spurred Sidewinder toward the captive woman. One hard case saw his determined approach and grabbed the reins from Consuela's hands. The bandits fought to escape the ambush. Another deadfall accounted for three more. A second bandit had grabbed the reins of Consuela Martine's horse and that of her daughter. He ripped his mount's flanks bloody with huge, cruel rowels and spread away from the milling confusion. Smoke worked closer to the two boys, seated on one horse. He reached them just a moment before one of the desperate banditos decided to take revenge on the youngsters. He raised his pistol. More bandits streamed by with the vaqueros of Rancho Paseo hot after them. There was no time to make a try for Consuela Martin and her daughter. Close as they were to the valley hideout, reinforcements would already be on the way.
Round up our people! Let's get out of here!
Smoke could barely think, his mind was so swollen with regret. How could he look Martin in the eye and report failure? Another day had gone by, with Martin close to losing hold of his reason over the thought of his wife and daughter in the hands of a madman like Carvajal. Back at their main base in Merced, he had been reunited with his sons. His eldest boy had bravely fought off tears while he told of their capture. When he got to the bandit riding off with his mother and sister, the water spilled down his face. His father wept also. Smoke turned away. No man appreciated witnesses at times like that. Now, he sat with Smoke and Carbone in the small cantina, rage and desperation still etched clearly on his face.
Carvajal will not be satisfied until he possesses all of Central Mexico. I suspect he believes himself able to take on the federal troops and win.
His men are good. Look what he did to my hacienda. But they are not that good. Give us a month, 2 months with these men, and we can root him out of anywhere.
Speaking of which, there's no doubt that Carvajal took your wife and daughter back in the camp in the mountains. How long they'll stay there is open for guesswork. So, I suggest we return to our original plan. Only we have more women to get out of there now.
Yes, I can see the sense of that.
And I. Of course, I will be coming on the next raid as before.
No, I don't think that's wise.
Why not?
You will be subject to letting your emotions cloud your skills when they're most needed, old friend.
Nonsense!
Look at it carefully. Think it through. Who would you go in for first?
My wife and child, of course.
And they might be the most difficult to get out of there. It could alert the whole camp. I don't like this any more than you. It's reasonable. It's the way we're going to do this. You could pick the men you want to go with you and head for your other village. Prepare the people there to defend themselves. Carbone and I will lead the rest to the valley and spoil some of Carvajal's plans.
Smoke Jensen's war party set out after dark. A quick scout of the area had revealed watchers in a ravine a quarter mile from Merced. Rather than eliminate them, Smoke opted for a ruse. The hooves of their horses padded with gunny sacks, the detail headed for Carvajal's camp walked their mounts out of town to the west. Smoke had insisted that everything that could rattle, scrape, or jingle be secured. No one spoke, and most muffled their horses' nostrils to prevent telltale whinnying. The ploy worked quite well. A mile away on the plain, the grim-faced troop removed the coverings from the hooves. They mounted up and turned to the northeast. Although it was the dark of the moon, they made good time.
It's over the other side of the long ridge. Get the men out of sight and settle down. After my last visit and that set to on the trail, I'm sure our friend El Rey has tightened his security.
You're the boss, amigo. You know more ways to be nasty in the woods than any of us.
You're no helpless infant yourself, friend.
Me? I have fought in the streets of 100 villages, maybe 200. I have ridden the Central Valley, but mountains are not my natural surroundings. You grew up in them. I marveled at the traps you set for Carvajal. I only wish you would have squashed that chingasso with one of them.
I might get lucky and land a stick of giant powder in his lap. I'm going to take a little scout around. Check on our opposition.
Bobby Harris sat in a thicket of wild blackberry and some stray aspens, some 5 miles from the Sugarloaf. He sipped at a canteen of tepid water and munched on a biscuit. It wasn't fair. He worked hard like any of the hands. They got paid regular wages, but he only made money when he topped off a horse. And everyone treated him like a baby. And he was lonesome, too. At least down south, he had friends his age. Sam and Petey, little Joe Butler. When he could get away from Rube Connors, they'd gone swimming in the old Dutchman's pond. Fished, hunted rabbits in the fall. Here, he had no one to pal with. And now, school was gonna start. He hated school. Funny, because he loved books, and he spent more time reading here on the Sugarloaf than he ever had at home. But school, doing dumb drills and handwriting and arithmetic because some dried-up woman said you had to? It was awful. Why wouldn't Miss Jensen listen to him? He crinkled up his button nose and his lower lip slid out in a big pout. The effect was spoiled somewhat by biscuit crumbs clinging to it. He'd taken Dollar and run off into the night. He'd show them. He'd drive them wild. Maybe he would head south, hunt for Smoke Jensen. Smoke let him drink coffee and talk to him like a grown man. Only how could he do that? That was a long ways off. Well, he did have $5 saved up from what Miss Jensen let him keep of his earnings. The rest, she banked for his future. Some future. Forever messing with horses and cleaning up after them and going to school. That $5 wouldn't buy many supplies, though, nor a train ticket. Well, he'd do it somehow. He'd show them all. The late afternoon sun touched his bowed shoulders and sent the warmth of Injun summer into his thin frame. Well, not so thin anymore, he thought with a snatch of pride. He'd been filling out with Sally Jensen doing the cooking and the work that strained and strengthened muscles in arms, chest, and legs. Why, he already wore a bigger shirt than he had only weeks ago when Smoke had bought some for him. A lump formed in Bobby's throat, and he fought back tears.
Oh, Smoke, why'd you send me away to this lonesome place?
Because he cares a lot about you and wanted you to have a good place to live.
Sally Jensen appeared in the small clearing.
I gather you needed some time by yourself?
Yes, something like that.
I bet you're hungry.
No, ma'am. Yeah, I guess I am.
You miss breakfast and dinner, no wonder. Everyone has a heavy burden on his mind once in a while. Have you come to grips with yours?
No, ma'am.
Tell me about it.
It's just that I'm so lonely up here. Got no friends, no one to do things with.
Well, if I told you that one reason you need to go to school is to meet other boys in the valley, would you believe me?
Huh? Well, I never thought of that. Yeah, I guess I would. That might make it worth it after all, huh?
There's something else, isn't there, Bobby?
I miss my ma. I miss her something awful. I never cried when we buried her. Rip said he'd whoop me if I did, but now, oh, Miss Jensen, I hurt so bad. I reckon I made a fool of myself now.
Yes, you did. But not here, now. You did that last night when you ran away. It was a spiteful act, wrong and unmanly. The Sugarloaf is your home. I've come to love you very much, Bobby. Smoke thinks the world of you and expects to find you here when he returns. But for running away, there has to be some punishment. No pie for 3 days. How's that?
Oh, Miss Jensen, I'd move a mountain for you. I surely would.
Half a day of observation had given Smoke Jensen the location of all of the captive women, including Martine's wife and daughter. He carefully stored in memory each hut or lean-to where one of the prisoners could be found. He returned to the waiting Avengers and changed clothes. Everyone now wore traditional Mexican clothing, in black or dark brown, with the big sombreros that Smoke had come to identify with the bandit army. Carbone had already picked out the brighter, more aggressive among the ranch hands, flock tenders, and shopkeepers. They gathered with Smoke Jensen at the crest of the ridge now.
Down there, in that big tent, Señora Martine and her daughter are in there. It belongs to Carvajal. So we have to be sharp in what we do to get him out. Over there, two women in that lean-to. Everyone get something to eat. No fires and still no smoking. We wait until 3 hours after dark. Give them time to fill their bellies and get drunked up. Then we simply walk in. You all know which captives you are going after. Be natural, relaxed. Talk and laugh with them and each other. Make it appear you belong. Be sure to get the women out of the back of whatever they're being held and into the dark as quickly as possible. Once they're all clear, you men on the ridge will let go with our surprise for El Rey. We'll be upstream with the women, so don't throw any sticks that way. Once the fun starts, we should be able to get away without being discovered.
If we have good fortune.
We make our own luck.
Several of Carver Hall's bandit army lounged around fires, drinking from glazed clay jugs of tequila. Some of them had eyelids that were starting to droop towards a drunken stupor. Carbone and smoke in the lead, the Avengers filtered into the camp. One fast thinker fumbled with the buttons of his fly, as though to give reason for his sudden appearance out of the dark. Not one person paid them any attention at all as they spread through the camp. No more than three came from any one direction, and they angled indirectly toward their objectives. Smoke noted the tension among the infiltrators, though he doubted that any of the bandits would recognize it. Many of the huts lay in darkness, and the men assigned to them approached quietly and unobserved. Smoke Jensen's keen hearing picked out several soft grunts as men in the shelters met death by nine were knocked unconscious. Smoke, Carbone, and Juan headed for Carver Hall's large tent on the blind side from the dying cook fires. While they bided time, Smoke kept track of the women being spirited out of the camp. By his count, all but three, plus Martine's wife and daughter, had been slipped away to safety.
Intruders! Bandidos are in the camp! They're taking the women!
Great.
Befuddled by tequila, the bandidos began firing at shadows and each other. But there were some that were more alert, and several of their number heaped wood on the fire to provide light enough to find out what had happened. Gustavo Carbajal burst out of the entrance to his tent.
There goes our perfect plan.
Smoke drew his knife. At once, he slashed the tent wall with his buoy.
You better go in. She knows you.
Carbone wasted no time. He climbed through the slit and gathered little Alicia in his arms. Then he looked at Consuelo.
Get your clothes. We have come to get you out of here. Hurry!
Smoke Jensen assisted Consuelo Martin through the opening in the tent wall and started off at once for the rally point. Leaves and small branches showered down, and the startled outlaws made an uproar that only added to the confusion. Two bandits appeared in Smoke's path, and he whipped out his .44 Colt in an eye blink. Lances of flame came from the edges of the trees where the rescuers gave covering fire to those still caught inside the camp. Carbone joined up with Smoke, Martine's daughter in his arms.
Juan Muriel is wounded, but he's coming behind.
I'll wait for him. You take these two on to safety.
Going to make some of that luck you talked about, amigo?
That I am, Carbone. Now get.
Showers of sparks rose and smoke rolled along at ground level. It gave a nightmare quality to the frenzied scene as bandits shot at each other and the unidentified targets beyond the lighted area. Indistinctly, Smoke saw Juan stumbling through the swirl of white. A bandit knelt in the doorway to a brush hut and aimed at the young man from Merced. Smoke quickly raised his pistol. Towering above most of the hard cases, Smoke made a sweeping gesture, directing Juan his way.
Time to be going.
They reached the edge of the tree line without any further interruptions. There, Smoke produced a capped and fused stick of giant powder from inside his shirt. At once, Smoke watched three more high arcs of sparks tumble into camp. All the while, Smoke Jensen and the wounded Juan Marial led the rescued women to where horses had been staked out for their escape. Carbone clapped Smoke on the shoulder.
Well, my friend, Carvajal will not soon forget our visit tonight. I am only sorry we couldn't finish it.
There are too many of them. Another time, and soon, I figure. Carvajal will have to do something drastic the way he sees things, and we need to be ready for him.
Ah, yes. He will be coming for us. I can feel it in my bones.
Gustavo Carvajal had been shaken to the toes of his size 7 feet. No one could create such destruction. How had it happened? He'd had guards out, good men, trustworthy, to keep watch. Had they been killed or run off like before? He suspected so. All he knew was his camp was a shambles. Smoldering ruins reminded him of the villages he had raided. He did the burning, the looting, the stealing of women, not anybody else.
Eagle warriors, to me! Come, my brave Jaguar warriors, rally around!
Gustavo Carvajal stood in a growing ring of bandits. He panted like a racehorse, and his face shone with oily perspiration. It dripped from him, staining the front of his nightshirt. Only then did he realize his state of undress. Rocky ground was hurting his tender feet.
They must not get away with this! Make deals! Victor Husango is in Zacatecas! Tell him we will pay him and his men well! Tell him we can conquer all of Mexico! Go to Alberto Portales in Nayarit! He can be trusted to bring in 30 men, cutthroats but good men. Say the time has come to repay old favors. We are going to make life miserable for Martin E. Garcia. First we attack his second largest village, then we take the last one, then the hacienda. We are going to take everything away from him, even his life. As for this gringo, Smoke Jensen, 5,000 gold pesos for his head.
Esteban Carbone met Martin in the small cantina after the tear-filled reunion of his family.
I am selfish, old friend. It is not right for me to be so happy at this reunion, when you can be reunited with Maria Elena only beyond the grave.
It is no matter. I am glad for you, and I have almost lost the terrible, empty ache Maria Elena's passing has given me. What we must do is concentrate on what Carvajal will do next. We should be meeting with Smoke.
There is time, amigo. The Youngbloods want a fiesta to celebrate the victory.
There's little enough to celebrate. We should join him. They can be quite persuasive.
Right as usual. He is at what's left of the posada.
The pair found Smoke Jensen in the inner courtyard of the inn. A dozen young men from the ranches in Merced surrounded him. They clamored for his attention, and Smoke didn't notice his friends enter. After several seconds more of enthusiastic chatter, Smoke held up his arms for silence.
It is true that we won a victory. We won the battle, but the war isn't over yet. Carvajal will be sure to raise some particular hell now. What you need now is some rest. Go to where you're staying, clean your guns, and go to sleep. Believe me, you're going to need both.
Disappointed, they departed in silence. Carbone and Martin approached.
What do you think we should be doing?
We agreed that Carvajal is most vulnerable when he is exposed. We need to draw him out in the open. I suggest we fortify one of your villages, Martin.
Pueblo Viejo. It is the smallest, but also the richest. He will want to come after that for sure.
Good. We'll take the whole company of volunteers over there. Fortify the place and force Carvajal to throw away men trying to get us out of there.
Carbone and Martin looked at Smoke. One after the other, they nodded in agreement.
You have been thinking about this.
All the way back from the valley camp. First, the men did well with the ambush. The traps were set perfect. Then, we heard him last night in the camp. How badly, we don't know. Chances are, some of those who joined him recently will be having second thoughts about staying on. Getting caught in the open and being cut to pieces will nudge them along with their decision. Most important is that we make sure every man will stand behind us. Go among them and make it clear how important this is.
Following his new plan, Smoke Jensen and the Mexican volunteers arrived at the small village of Pueblo Viejo. At first, the alcalde offered protest when the newly trained soldiers came to conscript all of the adobe blocks in his workyard. He made a good profit selling them to himself for municipal projects. Now they were to be pressed into use to construct connecting walls between the outermost buildings of the community. In a high dudgeon, he went to complain to the man in charge. At the first sight of Smoke Jensen, the mayor began to regret his hot, hasty decision. The man was huge, looking up on him from Alcalde Torres's 5'5". Those gray eyes were almost colorless, too.
You cannot do this. It is my livelihood you are taking away.
Smoke Jensen turned a bleak visage toward the mayor. Glacial ice formed in those large, fulminating eyes. Torres cringed inwardly. Smoke's words turned his innards to jelly.
You'd rather we left you to El Rey del Norte? He'll take your wife, not just the product of your labor.
Sí, but I must pay my workmen. I must have some form of compensation.
Smoke Jensen reached out in a friendly appearing gesture and clamped one big hand on the narrow shoulder of Mayor Torres.
You must understand the point of all this, Mr. Mayor. We're here at the direction of your patron, Don Miguel. He has instructed us to fortify this village against attack by the self-proclaimed bandit king, Gustav Carvajal. We know that this attack is certain. Now, you wouldn't want the deaths of your fellow citizens on your hands, would you?
By that point, Torres had gone to his knees. Tears stung his eyes. His mouth flapped like an outhouse door in a stiff wind.
You do comprehend what I'm saying, right?
Oh, see. Go ahead.
Rapidly, the adobe bricks disappeared. Willing hands mixed a slush of the clay soil to serve as mortar. The walls rose swiftly. Smoke turned its attention to other matters.
We need women who can quickly weave coarse nets of canvas strips and sisal rope. Also, get men to work with picks and shovels to dig pits outside the town. Stagger them. Some far out, some in close. A few right across the only road we'll keep open. Rig some spiked logs to drop over the walls to clear off Carvajal's men if they're smart enough to bring some scaling ladders. Also, I want a trench, 5 foot wide, dug 10 foot deep all the way around town. Set spikes in the bottom and line the sides with tinder dry wood.
You are playing very nasty, amigo.
I want to bring an end to this thing. When you have the brush in place, soak it with oil. Then cover the whole thing with thin branches, canvas, or some cloth and dirt.
Smoke and Carbone went next to where Martine's trained men were teaching new volunteers how to use firearms taken from Carvajal's outlaw army. They watched in silence for a while. Smoke frequently nodded approval of the teaching methods. Then, Carbone asked a question that had been troubling him for a while.
If we are turning Pueblo Viejo into a walled city, why the nets?
We'll put them between the buildings, over there with a layer of dirt to hide them from sight. When and if Carvajal's hard cases get inside town, they'll do like before. They'll ride in between houses and business places and fire through the windows. This time, people inside neighboring buildings can pull up their nets and snag the riders off their horses.
Is something wrong, amigo?
Nothing. A little twinge in my stomach. And let's go by where Blanco is inventorying the ammunition.
20 minutes later, Smoke and Carbone strolled outside the squat building where Rodolfo Blanco presided over the amassed supply of ammunition. Smoke removed his hat and mopped at the oily sweat on his brow. He was finding it hard to swallow. He replaced the big sombrero and directed their course toward the brickyard of the mayor.
I've been thinking about these tile water spouts the mayor has in his yard. If they could be capped at one end, a stick of giant powder and a couple of handfuls of bent nails and scrap metal from the blacksmith could turn them into a remarkable weapon.
Carbone grimaced, visualizing the terrible effect of the flying bits of iron. Suddenly, a sharp shaft of pain speared through Smoke's stomach. Beads of perspiration broke out on his forehead and upper lip. For a moment, the whole world spun.
Oh. What is it, amigo? You are suddenly so pale, white as snow in the Sierra.
I don't know. I gotta hit the outhouse.
Smoke made a hurried dash and made it to the Chicksail barely in time. A terrible stench accompanied the gush of fluid from his body. Wave after wave of knife and pains assailed his intestines, and dizziness robbed him of any awareness of his surroundings. Chills came next. Smoke's teeth chattered and his shoulders quaked. He burned on the inside and froze on his exposed skin. Another wash of watery matter ran from his body, and again the slivers of agony attacked him. He had heard of such ailments. Often the condition came from eating tainted pork or corned beef. Weakness tried his patience. Two more onsets of the fetid discharge occurred before the malady eased off. Intensely weary and shaken, Smoke finally left the outhouse. His throat and mouth clamored for water. A glance at his reflection in a glass window revealed a ghastly pallor. Carbone came to him, worry painted on his brown face.
You are sick, my friend. Have you eaten something bad?
I don't know. I'm having gas pains, then cramps. And all I did in there was pass water.
Dysentery. It is common in our country. It comes from bad water, or uncooked foods that are not raised properly or cleaned well. somehow it has taken a hold of you.
Oh, I haven't time to be sick.
All the same, you are.
Smoke Jensen had never even had a cold, let alone major illness, because he was the epitome of the perfect male specimen. Gunshot wounds are the result of a furious fight were just about all that had ever laid him low. He experienced an unaccustomed helplessness at the thought of his condition.
What can I do?
Lay down. Rest. Take lots of liquids. Everything must be boiled first. And take something to force the sickness out of you.
There's a doctor here.
There is an old woman who dispenses herbs and medicinal teas. I will bring her to you. Meanwhile, old friend, find a place to rest. Go to bed. And keep a chamber mug close at hand.
Smoke took a corner room in the posada. It contained a large, comfortable bed, an armoire, dresser, and a washstand. The thunder mug sat prominently on a lower shelf of the commode. Smoke eyed it with resentment. He drank 3 clay cups of water and sat on the bedside. Within minutes, the cramps returned, then the rumbling in his bowels. He made it to the chamber pot only a fraction of a second before he unloaded again. The dizziness nearly knocked him over. When the spell passed, he returned to the bed, pulled off his boots and cartridge belt, and lay out on the covers. Smoke rose and admitted Mrs. Martine.
I heard you had been taken with the dysentery. I have come to care for you.
Senora, you have your children to look after. Your husband's needs.
We owe you much for coming to our aid, Smoke Jensen. I will tend to your needs. There will be someone here at all times. Now, you need to drink more water and take this herb tea. It will wash out your system.
It's been fairly well washed out already.
Smoke Jensen awakened without any memory of having gone to sleep. Then he realized he must have lost consciousness. Sometime during the afternoon, racked by alternating chills and fever, his body dehydrated by diarrhea, he had simply dropped into blackness. He stirred now and ran his tongue over dry, cracked lips. Shakily, he reached for a clay cup of water on the bedside table.
Please, senor, let me help you with that.
Smoke didn't see Consuela Martin as he expected to. Instead, he gazed owlishly at a slender young woman with an angelic face, dominated by hypnotic eyes. She rose from the straight-back chair and came to him. She took the cup, pressed it to his lips, giving Smoke a close-up of her lush bosom.
Senora Martin.
She is with her family, resting.
She was here a while ago.
That was yesterday, senor.
Who are you?
I am called Mirabella. I don't deserve to be serving you, senor.
Say now, what's this?
The people of Pueblo Viejo say that I am a fallen woman.
What is it you're supposed to do?
To see that you get your herbs, senor. I must mix some now and brew a tea. Also, I am to help you, to...
Mirabella's embarrassed glance cut to the chamber pot.
I can take care of that on my own. If I can't, what I need is a diaper.
Can you eat, senor?
I don't know if I can hold it in place.
We can try some soup. I will help you with it while the herb tea steeps.
Smoke missed part of what she said because his head was still whirling. But he did eat the soup, and he lost it 5 minutes later. He also found, to his shock, that he could barely hold himself upright over the basin on the washstand. He rinsed his mouth and returned to the bed. Mirabella helped him sip the tea, and he lay back with a determined effort not to groan. The room swam, and Smoke slept. A huge grizzly bear chased Smoke Jensen through the tall pines and slender aspens. No matter how he zigged or zagged, the bear kept to his trail. Smoke felt himself growing weaker. A quick glance over his shoulder showed the bear to have gained 50 feet on him. The big clawed paws reached for him, almost a come here gesture. Smoke tripped over a fallen tree and fell hard on the ground. The bear closed in, saliva dripping from its huge pointed teeth. Smoke could feel the animal's fetid breath on his cheek. For a moment, the ceiling of the plastered Viega swirled in a mad spiral. Then it finally steadied, and Smoke found himself clear-headed for the first time in Hell, and how long? He looked for Mirabella and found her standing behind the high back wooden chair in which sat Consuela Martín.
Shh, Joe had a bad dream.
I remember some of it.
The worst is over. You will be weak for a while, but you will live.
I came close to dying.
Yes, and in more than your dream, Smog Jensen. You must eat. Rebuild your strength.
How long has it been?
3 days after the day you became sick.
I owe you a lot. And you, Mirabella, the old woman who provided the herbs, I must pay her.
They were given freely to heal you. There is no need.
I insist. Was I much of a burden?
No. The crisis came yesterday. You were delirious, could not leave the bed. But the herbs purged you.
Oh, couldn't leave.
Smoke became aware that he had a fresh, scrubbed, clean scent about him.
Mirabella tended to you.
And half an hour after the ladies had excused themselves, Smoke was up and dressed. He ravenously ate 2 bowls of thick soup and demolished a stack of 6 tortillas. He could feel the energy pouring back into him. Shortly before sundown, he stepped out into the courtyard of the inn. The cooling air tantalized his nostrils. Carbone rose from a stone bench and came to him.
We were worried.
I was too sick to worry. I hope I'm never so helpless again.
Foreign visitors to our more attractive seaports have taken to calling it Montezuma's Revenge.
I don't suppose our sawed-off friend Carvajal had anything to do with it.
No, it is as I told you before. Something in the water or the food you consumed. It is important that everything be well cooked, the water boiled.
The voice of experience.
Yes, no one is immune. It can strike anywhere. Now, let me tell you how the training is going.
Oh, let me sit down.
For the next 20 minutes, Carbone brought Smoke up to date on progress in the village.
The men are filling bags with dirt to raise the level of the low wall to the east. When that is done, everything will be in readiness.
You've done well. I'm sorry I haven't been able to help more.
The news that you are well has raised spirits already, amigo. Just knowing you are on your feet is a great help. Now, are you up to a real supper? No more that foul-tasting roots and bark and crushed beetles, or Consuelo's famous chicken soup.
I think I can handle it. I want to talk with both of you and the men we've picked to lead. 4 days of a complete blank leave me with an uneasy feeling that Carvajal has given us all the time we can expect.
Although greatly weakened, Smoke Jensen made an inspection of the defensive works the next morning. Warm fall sun on his back did wonders to restore him. By noon, he felt nearly his old self again. He took the noon meal with his friends.
You've done a good job. There isn't anything I would change. All we have to do is wait. And we could use a little scout around to see Carvajal's degree of readiness.
I'll send some of the vaqueros. They know how to get around unseen.
No, I think I need to do this myself.
Impossible, Smoke. You nearly died only days ago. You had no condition to undertake any long ride around Carvajal's army.
Esteban is right, Smoke. Think what would happen if the dysentery came back.
It's not. I'm drinking only boiled water and peeled cooked vegetables. No more flirting with Montezuma. Besides, I figured to reduce the odds a bit on this trip. Spread a little worry among the hard cases.
Carbone cut his eyes to Martín, who shared his expression of resignation. Short of tying him down, they could do nothing to stop Smoke Jensen. By mid-morning, Smoke had made it to the valley campsite. He arrived to find it deserted. All that remained were the litter, scars, and destruction caused by careless and different men. Smoke searched around and found a few ammunition and food caches. Apparently, the outlaw army intended to return. Smoke rigged them with bundles of blasting powder and long fuses. After lighting, he got well clear. Reasoning rightly that the army was on the move, Smoke chose the direct trail out of the mountains. In the open, he would be more vulnerable. He hated to admit it to himself, but his body rebelled against further strain. Less than 3 days away from delirium and fever, he had already come close to taxing his reserve of energy to the maximum. pondered the wisdom of heading directly for Pueblo Viejo.
No.
Much better that Carvajal's army arrived to put the village under siege in a demoralized condition. Smoke recalled a story Preacher had told him about the Cheyenne. It had happened in the olden times, before the horse. Warfare had been carried out then on foot. A Cheyenne war party had set out to revenge some child stealing by a band of flatheads, according to Preacher. They made their outward journey without incident. Carefully, the leader planned their attack on the village. While the flatheads slept, Cheyenne scaled the lodge pole pine stockade around the enemy camp. Like shadows, they flitted through the open spaces between birch bark lodges. One old man who couldn't sleep got clonked on the noggin, but other than that, them fellas found all but one of their stolen children and strode out the main gate bold as brass. They went down a swift river in stolen canoes. The old man survived and described the raiders to his brother Flatheads. The party set out at once. A count of damaged canoes left behind told them the number taken by the Cheyenne. They ran along the bank of the river until they found the place where their enemy had come ashore. Then they took off with the speed of a wolf pack.
They caught up to the Cheyenne, who were slowed by the young'uns. The fighting was fierce. Them Cheyenne broke off and got to a narrow pass that led down out of the Flathead country. And two of them had been so badly wounded they couldn't keep on the trail, so they stayed behind to hold off the Flatheads while their friends took the kids home. Well, sir, their defenses were so awesome that the Flatheads lost heart and quit that fight. They never went after the raiding party. Yep. Bones of those two heroes was recovered the next summer. Now, the point of all that smoke is that even if you are bad hurt, you can still demoralize your enemy, and chances are he'll not carry on the fight. Those warriors gave their lives for their brothers, but at such a cost, the Flatheads didn't want any part of unwounded Cheyennes.
Smoke Jensen smiled at his reverie. Leave it to old Preacher to have as many parables as the carpenter from Nazareth. Although Preacher's stories of life and how to live it were a considerable lot more bloody than those told on the shores of Galilee, which brought his thoughts around to something that had been nudging him since his bout of dysentery. He and Sally attended church irregularly at best. Having been reared and educated for the most part in the high lonesome, the white man's God seemed not so practical as the beliefs of the Indian tribes he had encountered, or the quiet, often unspoken reverence of the mountain men. Yet dredged from his delirium, Smoke held a vague memory of the finger of God reaching out of a cloud to touch him when he lay at his lowest point, tethering on the lip of death. He'd have to look into that, ponder it. Perhaps he would even share the imperfectly recalled experience with Sally. Steeling himself to fatigue and discomfort, Smoke put aside his study of mysticism and directed Sidewinder into a ground-eaten lope. He wanted to catch up to Carvajal's army as far from their intended target as possible. By his second night out, Smoke knew he could not be far away. The signs had grown fresher as the men long in the saddle had grown incautious. Directed by their outlaw natures, lacking the discipline of seasoned soldiers, they began to cast off broken gear, the corn husk wrappings of tamales, papers that had held tortillas. Smoke had a regular trash trail to follow. He made camp early so as to be able to eat a warm meal and enjoy coffee before darkness fell. After the meal, his tiny, smokeless fire buried under handfuls of dirt, Smoke settled in to wait. The onset of darkness gave him confirmation of his closeness to the bandit horde. Many fires put an orange glow on the horizon. Once the blazes died down and a lethargy of midnight settled over the enemy camp, Smoke made his move. True to form, Carvajal had sentries out riding circuit around the camp. Smoke found them as sloppy and inattentive as ever. After a careful study of their circuits and a positive count of numbers, he angled into position to intercept the first of his victims. Smoke first came upon a pair who had drifted together to share a smoke in a bottle. He worked up a wide lariat loop and dropped it over the both of them when one leaned close to accept a light for his small, crooked cigar. Jumpstart yanked them off their mounts. Smoke followed up its advantage by trotting back on them. The line kept taut. The black eye of his .44 muzzle looked down on the pair.
Do you two like what you're doing?
For one, senor, I have done more pleasant things.
Would you like to go back to doing them? Think hard. Your life depends on it.
Oh, you would not use your gun, senor.
No. I'd get down and slit your throats.
He means it, Anuncio.
He hasn't the cojones for that.
Smoke dismounted and crouched close to Conti. His buoy appeared in his left hand. The keen edge glowed a wicked blue in the pale light of the new moon.
I've got balls enough. Do you want to try me?
Oh, Jesus Maria, Jose! Look what your mouth has brought on us, Anuncio!
And you run your mouth like a frightened woman, Gabriel! Do your worst, gringo!
It is he who said those things, senor, not I. I would be most grateful to leave this madman's army and go back to my home.
And where is that?
Jalisco.
What did you do there?
I was a bandit.
Too bad.
Madre de Dios!
Gustavo Carvajal was pissed when he learned the disposition of the night guards. Of the 25 on duty, 5 of them had deserted during the night, 10 were dead, and the rest had been left in degrading, humiliating conditions. One had been staked out in the grass.
We must march on this fortress village of Martini Garcia and muddy the soil with the people's blood.
El Rey del Norte had cause to awake screaming the next morning also. This time, it was an abject terror. Brought out of a deep slumber by an oddly familiar wet copper odor, Gustavo Carvajal opened his eyes to see Ignacio Quintero staring at him from the foot of the bed. His mouth was twisted in a grimace of horror and pain. And his body? Well, his body was nowhere to be seen. The head sat on the bed inches from Carvajal's feet. Quintero had been assigned the duty of supervising the sentries. The man who would be king had believed that this precaution would prevent any repetition of the desertions and deaths of the previous night. Quickly, Carvajal pulled on boots and burst from his sleeping quarters into the front of the tent and on out the flap to confront two startled guards.
Bring Regales and Diaz! Have some men go together here at once!
Sullenly, the bandit army assembled in front of their leader's tent. Many suffered from hangovers. Most were groggy from being jerked out of a deep sleep. All had heard of the terrible events of the night. And not a few had second thoughts about the wisdom of following Carvajal. Before the day was over, several of these would find opportunities to turn away from the route of the march and speed off to safer climbs.
Campaneros, I have come to a momentous decision. We must continue our advance on Pueblo Viejo. As you know, our members have been reduced over the past few days. I call on all of you with friends or family willing to join us to go round them up. Tell them of the brutal murders of our friends. Tell them of the outrages of this gringo cabron pistolero, Smoke Jensen. He is but one man. He can be captured and made to pay for what he has done. And he can be found in Pueblo Viejo. Those walls cannot be well settled as yet, nor very thick. Therefore, we will take a day right here to devise a means of defeating them. We will build a large ram on wheels to smash the walls. Others of you are to find suitable materials and make scaling ladders.
Carvajal congratulated himself for having read those ancient books on siege warfare.
Then, when all is in readiness, we will advance to victory!
Smoke found Carbone and Martine in the courtyard of the inn. He greeted them with an easy smile.
You have them well organized. Even the gate guard challenged me with a very military who goes there. Good, because it's going to be needed.
Sit down, my friend. You look tired.
Smoke settled in a large carved wooden chair and leaned into the welcome cushion. Smoothly, and with pauses at important points, he gave an account of his activities since leaving Pueblo Viejo. Smoke went on to describe what he had observed in the valley camp and the destruction of the cached supplies. Then he got into his thinning of the ranks, and they listened raptly. Smoke concluded with a simple statement that summed up the fate of Ignacio Quintero.
The last thing I did was deprive Carvajal of the services of one of his lieutenants.
Carbone and Martin exchanged surprised glances.
How did you manage that? Did he desert his master?
In a matter of speaking, I'm not right proud of what I did, but it's had its effect. Carvajal's gone into camp on the plain side east of here to build siege machines.
Come on, hombre. What did you do?
I left Quintero's head on the foot of Carvajal's bed.
Qué bueno, Smoke. That was a brilliant tactic.
Oh, yes. Cold. Calculating. Absolutely guaranteed to terrify. Also totally lacking in any redeeming human quality.
We are at war, amigo. We may talk of the enemy general as a buffoon, a poseur, but he is not the least bit more harmless by that. He has to be deeply shattered by that, unsure of himself. In a war, my friend, one must do what must be done to win.
It could backfire on us. What if he calls in no quarter? Not spare even the young women and boys.
We are different people from you, Anglos. It is our Indian ancestry, I suppose. If Carvajal declares no quarter, it will only make our people fight the harder. They, too, will give no quarter, no prisoners. It will be a terrible slaughter.
Yes, damn it. And I thought that's what you sent for me to help prevent. I'm sorry. I may have brought more trouble right to your door.
We'll ask the people. In the morning, you can tell them what we have discussed and let them make the decision. Any who wish to escape will be free to go. No conditions, no prejudice. They will remain my people and Carbone's. Now, get something to eat. Take a few drinks with us, and have a good night's sleep.